He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guess.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That is right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Wednesday afternoon, October 29th here on 1430 ESPN, just a couple days before the big one, right? Spooky season, Halloween. Did you get your costumes yet? Have you bought your candy yet? Have you figured out, have you mapped out the trick-or-treat routes just quite yet? Are you going to haunted houses? All that great stuff involving the spooky season before we dive into the final couple months of the year. All right, we are here. We are live on this 1430 ESPN Fresno afternoon. Big thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us in the previous hour. Tony D Show, Sportsline Bulg Hour. Tony D from 2 to 3 p.m. on 1430. You can listen to it on 1430ESPNFresno.com or live on our ESPN Fresno app as well. His show, my show, Paul Metter's show, the Central Valley Sports Report, live from 10 a.m. to noon. Going up till 4 o'clock today before we send it out to the L.A. Dodger Stadium, site of Game 5 of the World Series, tied at 2. You can't lose the World Series tonight. You can't win it tonight, but certainly it'll mean a lot in terms of where the grand scheme of who will win this title moving forward based on the result tonight. So we'll see where it all plays out from there. Good to be here. Lee's Air Hotline, sponsored by Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. It's Lee's Air Hotline is 559-320-1430. That's the way to reach our show, 559-320-1430. The way to reach our program if you have anything to get involved in with the conversation today. Love it, getting part in that. But we also have the Lee's Air Weather Check. 78 degrees is the temperature outside right now. Getting up to 78 and about staying there today. We'll dive into the 50s tonight, and we'll get up to 81 tomorrow. Playing around in the high 70s and low 80s for the next few days. Really, the next week, it's going to be like this up until about, I would say, a cliff falls off next Wednesday, Thursday. We might get into those cooler temperatures and maybe wetter weather in terms of that as well. But should be a perfect weekend. I know a lot of people got some good weekend plans. I know we're talking weekend plans on a Wednesday, but it does not matter. What do we got on the show today? Ryan McCarthy, Fresno State women's head coach, going to be joining me in about 10 minutes or so. Talking about his program, which has got a couple exhibitions in and are ready to start their season on Monday against the FPU Sunbirds, which is a game you could listen to right here on 790 on Monday. It was 5 o'clock, start of the doubleheader between FPU and Fresno State. Scott Bemis and Paul Metters will be on the call, so you can listen to both games on 790 on Monday. All right. Well, we're here, like I said, live, and, you know, it's good to see he is alive in the capacity that he is. Hopefully he's feeling better. You're going to find out Jorge was a little sick yesterday, so it's good to have him back. I'm not gonna go to you too much here today, Jorge, so I don't want to wreck your voice, but it's good to have you here, Jorge, producing. How are you doing on this Wednesday, all things considered?
I'm hanging in there. Yeah, I got a little bit of a cold there going, but we'll see how it develops. We'll see.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Exciting.
Thank you.
I have this running theory that you stayed up so long for Game 3, it got you sick.
probably because I don't know. My roommate was feeling it. He was kind of sick, and
yeah.
And I stayed with him because his girlfriend was at the game. His girlfriend's a big Dodgers fan.
Yeah.
And I was in it. I was like, I'm gonna be here till the end.
Well, I was wondering if you're staying up just to make sure our broadcast was still going. I don't know how many breaks it could go until the inning.
It went all the way through. It was funny. I had to wake up in the morning and it got stuck in the commercial. So
yeah,
it just kept going.
It went 18 innings so long. It went so long it almost broke every equipment we had in terms of it. No, we're good though.
Well, the satellite, the signal, ESPN had it going. So as long as they had it going, we were going to be good.
We're good. And then, of course, last night we had a little bit more of a brisk pace to the game. One team looked tired. The other team looked energized and ready to go and take off after that. I said yesterday in our show that I worried about the stamina of Shohei Ohtani pitching on the mound just in terms of him having to run the bases 9 times from Monday's game. Takes a lot out of you. Your legs aren't quite there, but Shohei is a freak of nature when it comes to that. And the Dodgers take a 1-0 lead early in that game, but the Blue Jays, I don't know what the statistic is in terms of how many times they've scored after a team scores on them. They've answered the call, and they answered the call again with Vlad Guerrero, who hit a home run to go ahead 2-1 in the top of the third, and that was really kind of the difference maker into it. Ohtani made one mistake. Vlad caught the hanger, and the Blue Jays did not look back. They kept Ohtani in into the seventh inning last night. Thought that was an interesting choice, knowing that I think maybe it was a product of just what they have left from the night before in terms of relievers, and the Dodgers were looking to scrap in any form or fashion of trying to just put 9 innings of baseball together. I know they wanted to save some guys, and they have some bullets for tonight in terms of where they can go, but thought it was an interesting choice from Dave Roberts, but it was felt like his hand was forced. I'm not going to kill it in terms of it, but what it proved to me last night is that the Blue Jays are just as they've continued to play the baseball they've played all throughout the postseason, which is bat on barrel or ball on barrel, finding contact, just looping it into center field, right field, left field, finding the base hits, keeping the line moving. They're not going to absolutely devastate you with these monsters, high towering home runs. And suddenly you look up at the scoreboard and you're like, how did it just become two? It was 2-1. And how did you get to 6-1 in terms of that for the lead? So the Blue Jays nickel and dime you. And I think conceivably there's this question I have for the folks here in terms of it is, I think the Dodgers are a little lucky to have this series tied up at 2 right now in terms of it, just based off of where we've gone. The Blue Jays absolutely dominating game 1. You get a fantastic performance from Yamamoto in game 2. Frankly, the Dodgers needed to win game 3, I would say, based off of the circumstance there of how much they were going into that game. Maybe there was something last night in terms of how they were approaching the game at the plate. Felt like a lot of their starters were tired, taking shorter at bats, limiting themselves in terms of their attack. And the Dodgers looked like they played 18 innings the day before. I don't think the Blue Jays looked like they played 18 innings before. And maybe that's a product of their manager Schneider pulling out a lot of the big stars other than Guerrero after like the 12th inning, right? There was a lot of different guys who aren't the normal starters, and suddenly Bichette had his ability to play. Alejandro Kirk looked fresh. You know, Jimenez looked great in terms of that. And so I wonder if that's a product of it. But tonight's going to really determine a whole lot in terms of how this World Series is going to go. And I find this one fascinating. Do I believe the winner of the World Series wins this game tonight? I don't know if I necessarily believe that. I still think there is a game-by-game results situation here for this World Series where I firmly believe both of these teams are capable of bouncing back even if they lose and potentially go and win 2 in Toronto. I've always had Blue Jays in 7. I've always thought this series was close. And I just simply think it is playing out the way that I really believed it was, which is these two teams fighting and scrapping. Somebody described this, Jorge, somebody described this World Series as a lion versus a mongoose. You know, it's not a David versus Goliath. It's a lion versus like a honey badger. And the Blue Jays are kind of the honey badger right now, where they're not scared of the big contracts, of the big names that are on there. Clearly, the lion's bigger in terms of its ability. But the honey badger will make a lion back off, I think, in some cases, right? And so I found that as an apt comparison to this series.
Yeah, it's I feel like the Dodgers really played to win the game, but the Blue Jays knew that there was more time. They had more other games to win. That like they really wanted to win that game. Don't get me wrong, but at the same time, like they pulled off a little bit. Like most of the stars, like you said, just so they could be ready for the next game.
Mm-hmm. So, what is the edge tonight? We can look at that towards the tail end of the show tonight, before we get into game five and send it to that pregame at 4 o'clock. But I asked this question. Do you feel like the Dodgers are lucky to have this series tied at two, or do you think it's the right result so far based off of what we've seen? Like, I think the Blue Jays have played better than the Dodgers in this series. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree. I think that 18-inning game was literally like whoever got the luckiest, that pitch and at the end was going to win it. And that's how it went down. I felt like the Blue Jays played a little bit better that game, but just were unlucky to not get those.
They didn't have their pieces by the 17th, 18th. They didn't have the guys who could deliver the big hit. The Dodgers had their guys in there. Freeman, Mookie. Mookie's got to wake up in this series. I don't think Mookie's really woken up in this entire postseason. Shohei obviously doing his thing. Teoscar, he's had a couple of big home runs, big moments, but it hasn't really totally been the onslaught of Dodger bats that have been going at her. You know what's funny? You know what's funny about this, Jorge? I think about last year's World Series, and the Dodgers kind of played like the Blue Jays of this World Series, right? Where the Dodgers are like, let's just put it in play. Let's just get the Yankee, remember when the Yankees were just bad in the field and a lot of errors and a lot of mental mistakes were happening in this World Series, and the Dodgers knew to scout that. They cannot do that in this series because the Blue Jays are fantastic on the defensive side. And so what do you got to do? You actually have to produce with the long ball and produce with big-time swing momentum swings. And sometimes when you're relying on that, I don't find it is the most sustainable strategy to win baseball games, especially in a series like this. And so I feel like the Dodgers of last year are getting Dodgered this year from the Blue Jays. So that's why I think there's been such a big difference to it, because the Dodgers can't exploit a weakness that the Blue Jays have that they were able to exploit last year in winning the World Series over the New York Yankees. So I think it's a matter of they got to get amazing starting pitching from tonight. I think Blake Snell absolutely has, I would say, the game of his life. He has to have the game of his life tonight in order for them to have a hope of resetting their bullpen. They need tonight, Jorge. I think they need seven in order to avoid losing this game tonight. They need seven out of Blake, but it's going to be interesting to see how quickly these managers start getting a little frenetic at where their starter pitcher is. I think there's obviously a longer leash with Blake Snell. I think there's a shorter leash with Treya Savage, who Jorge, did you hear he was starting his season with, I think it was about 120 fans in the stands at a single A baseball game that started his season. He started in single A baseball, and there were about 120 fans when he made his first start this season. Pretty remarkable to now have him have a crucial game five start tonight in Dodger Stadium.
I mean, that's what you work for, right? But
crazy.
More motivation for him to, have a good outing today.
Yeah,
feels like destiny, kind of, when you start down low and then all of a sudden you're in the World Series. So
it's gonna be a fun one tonight. It's been a fun World Series, Jorge. We're geared up for an all timer, I would say, in terms of World Series. This is already gonna go six. It's gonna go to Toronto. We have game six on Friday, which I think will start at 4 o'clock on 790. Correct. For the folks who are listening. So, and if that happens, if it goes seven, we'll have it on Saturday on 14:30. Starting at 4 o'clock. So that's your remaining schedule for the World Series there for you there. All right. we'll go back and talk about game five at the end of this hour here, predictions, who's going to win, all that great stuff. But I want to get to my interview with Ryan McCarthy, Fresno State women's basketball coach, coming in the studio here, chatting about the start of their season, including what to expect from the Lady Bulldogs here next. So stay with us. Ryan McCarthy coming up next on 1430 ESPN. All right, we're here in studio with head coach Ryan McCarthy of the Fresno State women's basketball team. Coach, it's good to always have you, especially ahead of the anticipation of a season beginning. And I know that'll be happening in a few days. Actually, you can listen to the game on 790, FPU versus Fresno State on Monday. Coach, good to have you in. Excited to get the season rolling here soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, excited. And we're looking forward to what we can what we can anticipate with this women's basketball team. I hear the word mayhem more than I've heard into a lead up into the season. I don't know, Coach, if you're I don't know if you have a tally of how many times you've heard it, but I know people are excited about the brand that is being brought to this program. What excites you about what we're seeing so far in the lead up?
You know, we've had a couple of competitions early on. We had a scrimmage against a Division I team down in LA, and then we had our exhibition against UC Merced. And so, you know, I think, you know, both results were the same. You know, we won both competitions and in different ways. I thought we looked better in some facets down at CSUN, and I thought we looked better at some facets when we played UC Merced. But we had to clean up some things, and especially the way that, you know, we finished each competition. So, you know, I'm excited. I think this team has a lot to prove. It's a lot of players without Division I resumes. And I think we might be the only team in the whole country that has as many Division II transfers as what we had to kind of fill out this roster. And then, you know, our player with the most impressive Division I resume averaged 7 points a game at a 6-win team. So, you know, for year one, I think it's a good opportunity for a lot of these ladies that, you know, haven't had much success at the Division I level, and to be able to prove that, you know, they're better than what their statistics show.
Yeah, obviously you don't have to tell them a lot in order to draw what they need out of their game to show that they belong at this level. Of course, when it comes to players who come from one level to another, it's no secret they're fighting for that spot every time. And when you get these players to come in to this situation and get ready to play, the level of competition, the amount of depth these teams showcase in terms of the talent, what were the conversations like in getting them prepared for a season like this?
You know, I think, you know, with the ladies that transferred up, they've maybe lost 12 games in their career, you know, so this was a situation where I think they came in with a lot of confidence, and they had tested themselves against Division I level competition and were successful. So I think the biggest thing for them was, you know, helping our coaching staff establish a winning culture and, you know, what that expectation should be night in and night out and not just on game nights. And so to me, that's what I've noticed with this team, was that, you know, we all of a sudden became somebody different the day before the game and the day of the game. And that was a long conversation we had to have as a team. And I think we've made some big steps forward. You know, we had probably our best practice of the year last night. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can talk about how tough you are, but eventually you got to fight, you know. And so I think, you know, with this team, we've had that conversation a lot. And we are right now, if, you know, we were keeping track, we're 2-0. But I think at the same time, there are stormy seas ahead if we're not continually making improvements.
You mentioned these exhibitions and what you bring out of them. And of course, now we're into the games that'll count for real starting on Monday. But what do you as a coach try to get out of that? Is it as much of a simulation of what you throw out there in terms of rotation? Or is it a trial in terms of I'm trying out some things, I'm trying out some mixtures and combos and how I want to throw out the lineups?
Yeah, I think it's a little mixture of both. You know, I think one was just, you know, getting the ladies out there, and especially when we were down playing the Division I team, you know, getting down there and just proving that, hey, like, this works, we'll win. if you meet the standard that we have for you. And then I think the other part was, you know, I think, you know, our game against Merced, I would imagine that causing 38 turnovers in a game would be a top 10 in program history. And so, like, you know, I told them, you know, you guys could set, you could make a mark on the history of the program, you know, if you continue to buy in at this level. So I think, you know, part of it was, you know, we're messing around, we're tinkering with some lineups, to see, you know, where is our depth and what does that look like and who plays well together in those situations. And then obviously teaching some players some different positions and trying those out, because, you know, in UC Merced, we tinkered around with a lineup that was like, hey, what if so-and-so got in foul trouble? Or, you know, we really didn't have to deal with any foul trouble in that game. So, you know, last quarter, we're kind of throwing out some different things, and we hadn't really practiced it. So that was good to see how that could work in a game, and, you know, go back this week and practice and kind of fix some of those things that weren't super sharp.
How much do you as a coach kind of R&D that throughout the season of just, you know, like, do you come up with your lineup at the beginning and say, okay, this is what I believe in will work, and kind of like a football coach is like, these are the starters and this is what we got? Or is it more nuanced? Is it like a baseball coach who thinks of the lineup a little bit and like, maybe I put this person forth and you know, and see where they react into these situations? How does that measure in comparison to what I those examples?
Yeah, I think it's more like a boxing, more like a boxer, you know. Yeah. You gotta knock the guy out to get your spot, and everything that we do is competitive. So yeah, it's more, you know, if you want to be the sparring partner, then you got to give the fighter some good rounds. And so I think, you know, for us, we measure everything in wins, deflections, and rebounds, and those are the things that win. In the history of our program, you know, we've been doing this for 14 years now. We're undefeated when we have 35 or more deflections in a game, and none of the other stats matter. So that would be something that we really chart in practice, and we break down and we show them when we can get those opportunities. But yeah, you know, I would say we look at it a little bit lineup wise. It is performance based. I'm not going to roll with the starters because I'm loyal to the starters. You know, they got to show us that, you know, they're winners, and they're going to practice hard so that we know what to expect in the game.
I want to go back to the deflection part. Where did you find the correlation? Was it early on as a coach, or is that just some core belief you've had kind of really from the beginning when you were coming up as a coach?
So I had heard Rick Pitino talk about it one time when he was at Kentucky. And for them, it was 30 or more deflections. And if they were to get those, they were undefeated. And so when we started charting ours, we just kind of took the number 35. We had kind of charted it in practice and some practice games and stuff like that. And, you know, ever since, you know, we started doing that, we went back into Synergy and started looking at all the games and charted the deflections. And, you know, there's games we'll win and, you know, maybe we get 17 deflections, but we know it is guaranteed that there is a victory in store for us when we get 35 or more.
So when it comes to creating that, obviously, the key word mayhem in terms of that being a part of that, you know, what does it come out from? Where does it come from a player? Is it the anticipation on defense? Is it the instincts on defense? Is it the scouting of like knowing what kind of sets are running in terms of what they're seeing and how they're formulating the way they're lined up on the court? You know, where does it come from having that success and finding your way to that number you set?
You know, I think it's like, you know, we have to focus on what we do. You know, I think jumping the ball is really important, being up the line in denial, and being able to recruit athletic players. You know, a lot of that, you know, high school coaches ask me all the time, particularly on the boys side, you know, what do you do? And, you know, you have this crazy record. Can we implement this? And, you know, we're not playing the same game as high school. You know, we're playing chess and high school's playing poker. You know, they got to, I'm kind of playing poker this year, you know, like they're, you know, it's the hand you're dealt, and that's how you got to play it. That's a game of poker. So I think for us, a lot of it is teaching them the instinct of that. I think a lot of the time, girls don't grow up playing basketball as much as boys. You know, you go down to a park, you know, it's very rare that you're going to see 10 girls out there playing. Mm-hmm. And so their IQ as they grow up just isn't the same instinctually as boys would be, you know, if you were to kind of generalize it. So we try to teach them that part. And then I think with, you know, the mentality of it, we just create a very competitive atmosphere that we want to make sure that it's intense. And that's one thing I think a lot of other teams can't simulate. You know, this is maybe when you get to be the college basketball player, you go from being, you know, just a normal civilian to a Marine. Well, mm-hmm. if you come to us, you're becoming a Navy SEAL. So that's kind of how I look at that.
What is the conditioning like for your players leading into a season? Is it tough to get ready for a season for players?
Yeah, I would say this one's probably the easiest one, right? Because we had to, you know, when you came to my old school, you were coming there to win a championship. You know, you were not coming there because the weather was good, right? Yeah. And so here it's a little bit different because we're kind of trying to instill that. But if you ask any player on our team and you ask them what the hardest preseason they've ever had, they would say this. And I think that we can prove we can make it harder. But I think, you know, what we always talk to them about is, as hard as that was, that's what we want to drag the other team through for 40 minutes every time we play them.
Obviously, fans are excited to see this team and what they're capable of. You know, I'm sure you could name every player on the roster, but I want to highlight a few for you in terms of what are some players fans are going to be excited to see maybe they don't know about them yet, because obviously a lot of this roster is new. There's a few returners, but other than that, tell me a few players that I think fans are going to learn about and find out about and be really excited to get to know and see them on the court.
Well, one I would say is Jaysa Gamble. You know, she's a team captain for us this year, and she's played for me the longest. Mm-hmm. She's also one of the more improved players that I've ever coached. You know, against Merced, she had 21 points and had 13 deflections. And for us, there's an award after every game that we get a win, and it's a 2 foot long dog bone. And the person that gets the most deflections, we just call it the hungry dog gets the bone. And so you write down the number of deflections you had. If you had the most, only on wins, you know, you write the score, the date. And so she was the winner of the dog bone last time. And then I think the other person that won the dog bone for my team last year would be Amelia Long.
Okay.
And she was recruited by a majority of the Mountain West when she went into the transfer portal. And so she reminds me a lot of a guy named Bennett Sturtz on the men's side, who was a transfer from Northwest Missouri State. He was second team all league in mm-hmm. the MIAA, and then he went on to become the Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year at the Division I level. So all of a sudden, he got way better, right? I think that kind of reminds me of Millie a little bit, and she's a really special athlete. And those two are at the front of our press. And then I think one player I think has a lot of potential to be really good would be Jess Diarawa, and she was a transfer from San Jose State, was fifth in the Mountain West, and offensive rebounds. And you know, we've coached her very hard this year, and she's, you know, continuing to develop her game and things. But I think if that light turns on for her, she could be a big problem.
You know, it's exciting to see just kind of the blend of just different backgrounds of this roster in terms of it, and the combination of maybe where all of these girls have learned basketball coming into this team and making this team what it is. For you, Coach, does it excite you about like the different ideas that can come from these players based off of where they've kind of grown up playing the game in terms of the aspect of basketball?
Yeah, I think it challenges us as a staff. You know, we do have a diverse team. We have some, you know, deficiencies in terms of like, you know, we are on the smaller side of a Division I team, but we do have some pretty diverse skill sets where we can put certain individuals in space and, you know, take advantage of our athleticism, because I do think we are on the upper end of a Division I team for athleticism. So that gives us an advantage in, you know, the game when it becomes a 94-foot game. So, you know, for us, that's what we're really trying to challenge them to do, and, you know, to think creatively, you know, not just be, you know, robotic in our offense and be confident in, you know, their game, because really nobody, with the exception of, you know, maybe two or three players that had played at the Division II level, are used to being quote-unquote the man, you know. And so we're just trying to kind of unleash that in them a little bit and take ownership in their game.
I want to ask about the schedule too, about this team. And of course, you're getting going on Monday against FPU, but there's some obviously some interesting teams out there in terms of it. Some big schools out there with a lot of money, like a Washington coming in. You got to go to Washington. You know, you go to a tournament facing New Mexico State and Louisiana Lafayette. You get St. Mary's is a decent program. You know, tell me about the diversity of what you're preparing your team for when you schedule this. This non-conference as you want to get them ready for Mountain West play.
Yeah, I mean, some of that schedule is already set for us, and so I thought it was honestly a good schedule for us. Mm-hmm. Because we kind of up the ante as it goes along. You start out with like an FPU, and then I think it's Seattle U or Bakersfield, and we kind of go into that like a more like a low major type of level, and then we beef it up after New Orleans with or right before New Orleans with UW, BYU.
Yeah, you got BYU, Washington, and then Santa Clara all on the road.
Yeah, those are three hitters in a row, right? So, and I know Santa Clara's got a bunch of NIL money, so they had a really good transfer portal class come in. But, that's good for us. I want that. That's a really – like, I always think you learn more about your team around Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so you think you know who you got at the beginning. You do your own inter-squad, competitions – and some of that cream rises to the top, but you always have like one or two dark horses that kind of show you who they are around Thanksgiving. And then you can, I've always added the most sets in during that time. We always make the most adjustments, during that time to our game plan and maybe what type of team we're going to be, because we've always pressed and we've always played fast and, these types of things, but we haven't always done it the same way. So every team has its own signature. So I'm excited to learn more about them, because this isn't a team that, I've coached for 2 or 3 years. That's the part that I'm excited about. But I definitely think our schedule gives us opportunity to learn those lessons.
And then, you got back from Mountain West Media Days. You got to know some of the coaches, I'm sure. Saw some of the other opponents that are going to be coming into this conference, including – 1 year with Grand Canyon, who's going to be added to this conference this year in terms of it. What stands out? Obviously, this is the one and only year Fresno State's got left in the Mountain West before we move to the newly formed Pac-12. But what challenges does the Mountain West present in terms of the caliber of coaching, caliber of players, and what you're going to be facing in the conference this year?
No, I think it definitely does have really good coaches. I think every level does, though. I think some of the best coaches in the country. I've had the opportunity to coach against Duke and Georgetown and these really, really big programs during my time, and I'm gonna tell you, some of the best coaches I've coached against were Division II, and just how they move their pieces. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of having to do more with less. I do think that this league does have some very good coaches. That's not to minimize any of them, and I do think the caliber of player that the Mountain West can get, I think, is really high, because it has such good brand recognition, probably more so because of football and men's basketball. But I think on the women's side, we're excited about that. I think in year one, it's difficult to sit here and say, man, we're going to be the best team, or we're not a ninth place team, because I don't think anybody knows. Not that we don't know, because we haven't seen every single team play in front of us, but they haven't seen us either. And so I don't know how to answer that one. But if there were like a BMF award, like how UFC has it, that's the award that I'd want this year.
We would take that for sure. Coach, it's exciting, like I said before, to just get ready to get going here in the basketball season, which gets going on Monday. You've coached a long time, so I don't know if nerves is the right word to describe it, but just what's the eagerness like? Is you just to have finally a game for real to put on paper? I know you had the exhibitions, but this one counts to the record on Monday. What is it like as you lead into the game since you've been hired to where you are now? I'm sure it's been just building and building.
Yeah, I mean, that's our mindset, right, is building and, just trying to be as prepared as we can. And I think with the ladies – not trying to overwhelm them with what we know, like give them some of the keys to the game that we think that we can teach in that amount of time and that they can comprehend. And I think the longer we go, against Fresno Pacific, for example, they're dribble drive, they do all these pitchbacks and handoffs, and they're undersized and they're only going to shoot lay-ins or threes. There's not very much mid-range game to those guys. And so, we can take that for a week and we can have that in our toolbox for the next week. And maybe, we're playing an opponent the following week that really wants to bang on the interior or something and work on our post defense and our doubles out of that and stuff. So, you know, I think that's what I'm excited about as the year goes on, just that process of maximizing what our potential can be.
Of course, getting the fans to Save Mart Center to watch this team, you know, what excites you about what the fans can see this year in terms of the women's basketball product and what you know, getting the people down to Save Mart to see this team play?
You know, my goal is, one of the reasons I took this job, because this area values toughness and grit and all the things that I am about to my core. And so what I want them to walk away is that they saw the toughest, hardest playing team that they have ever seen. And I want to continue to prove that night in and night out. One other thing is, it won't just be about basketball. We went, I have a meeting tonight with our band director. I know they're composing a song for us as we come out. I've met with a couple of the fraternities. And, you know, I was hoping I would get some Frank the Tank chants or something like that. But, you know, we're going to have them at the game. And I just think at the end of the day, whether you're a basketball fan or women's basketball fan or not, we want to create a party. And I think that this is the last level of basketball where, you know, you do have a band, you do have a student section, you can get, you know, the Greek life in the game and kind of spice that up a little bit. And I think that's what a lot of fans miss about their college days. You know, it's not just about the entertainment value like the pros. College is special because of those things, and we want to make sure that we do a good job of you know, exposing that for creating that kind of environment for our home games.
Hey, we'll take a party for sure, especially if this, you know, with this team, and we'll see where it goes from there this year. But it's going to be exciting when they hit the field, or hit the court on Monday against FPU, which you can listen to right here on 790 for the broadcast. Ryan, I appreciate it as always. Best of luck this year. I'm sure this will have you sometime again in this season. So appreciate it as always.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We'll be right back with more Behind the Bench right after this on 1430 ESPN. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Hey, YouTube TV customers, you could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, more. Take action. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. So, good to be back. One more segment of our show before we send it back to L.A., one final game at Dodger Stadium this season. And Jorge, I like going to a game at Dodger Stadium, but I don't know if this is aesthetically something. I don't find the watching experience of watching a baseball game at Dodger Stadium all that interesting or pleasing in terms of it. And I say this for one reason, because They blast everything so loud in that stadium that I can barely hear any of the broadcaster. I don't know if the equilibrium's off in terms of their audio on the broadcast. I'll tell you what, I have no idea what Joe Davis said in the walk-off home run in the 18-inning game 2 nights ago. I have no idea what his call is, because it was so damn loud in Dodger Stadium with the music and all the celebration and all that stuff. So maybe I'm just being an old man about it. But I don't seem to have an issue with any other stadium I watch baseball in terms of the
I think it's because they're on like a hill.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I don't know. They didn't build it right,
They didn't build it right, yeah, back in the 50s when they were planning for all of that stuff. But I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of good riddance to watching games at Dodger Stadium this year.
It was supposed to be housing there, so I don't know. Maybe they tried to build a house or something.
Maybe. Maybe. Used to be houses, right?
Well yeah.
Complicated history.
Yeah, it's complicated history.
Complicated history. For
eventually somebody came in and said, well, I'll build a stadium there.
Someone had to build a stadium somewhere, I guess. I don't know. All right, Jorge. Let's do our daily spread brought to you by Chicchancy Gold Resort and Casino. If you're not trying your luck with your teams, try your luck with Chicchancy Gold Resort and Casino today. Dodgers a minus 198 favorite to win tonight over under 8 runs in terms of that. Blake Snell going up against Trey Savage. Last time we had this pitching matchup, the Blue Jays won 11-2. What happens tonight? What's your prediction for tonight's game 5?
I think the Blue Jays take it. I think they found something yesterday that maybe they weren't missing, but they just didn't have the previous game. But I think the Blue Jays take it, and it's going to make it very interesting when they go back home.
I found it interesting. I was listening to Blake Snell commentary after his start, and he said that he was a little surprised on some of the approach from Blue Jays hitters, but he says, quote, he feels like he's adjusted. He has a better game plan for some hitters. He'll attack some hitters the same way, and he'll attack some hitters differently in this game. But Jorge, I always find if the hitter knows what they're expecting in terms of that, that sometimes it's advantage hitters when they know what's coming from the pitcher side of things. And Blake Snell was having a frustrating time putting away the Blue Jays hitters. I think there's an issue here of if the Blue Jays know the Dodgers want to go 7 innings with Blake Snell tonight. They know that for a fact. But I don't think they're going to allow that in any sense. There is going to be long at-bats tonight. There is going to be grinded out, foul away pitches in tonight's game. There's going to be 9 to 10 pitches per at-bat in some instances in this game tonight that won't allow Blake Snell to get deep in the game and will have to force Dave Roberts into finding a way to get into a bullpen that right now I think still is pretty shaky outside of Roki Sasaki. This is why I picked the Blue Jays to win this series, is because the Blue Jays can do that to your starters, especially starters who were rolling earlier. The confidence was there, and now suddenly it's like, you know, do you have the confidence to have put away pitches that can get you in through quick at bats? Shohei was kind of rolling through a couple innings, then he just left a hanger for Vlad, and that was it, you know, in terms of it. I think the Blue Jays have the formula tonight. I think the Blue Jays have the formula to win the series, and this is the next step for me in terms of agreeing with you, Jorge, that I got to believe that the Blue Jays can win tonight. The key for the Dodgers is it's something that we need to see they haven't done really in this postseason yet, which is hit. You know, like I think the highest run output in terms of this postseason was that game 4 in the NLDS. You know, let me look at it back real quick in terms of what they've done so far through this postseason. They had obviously 6 two nights ago. The game 4 against the Brewers was a 5-1 victory, so it wasn't even as much. Six runs, Jorge, was the most they scored. They did get on the Reds in the wild card, but that was we're approaching a month ago now in territory in terms of the 2 wild card games they had against Cincinnati, where they scored 10 and they scored 8. The Dodgers have not scored more than 6 runs at all in this postseason, and that's been about a month of play. And I don't know if I can expect the Dodgers bats to figure it out 3 more games left in the season to give you more than 6 in terms of that. Because I don't think the Blue Jays can outslug the Dodgers, but the Dodgers certainly can do that to the Blue Jays. I just haven't found evidence of it this postseason, and that's where the crux of it. I'm not trying to be a hater of the Dodgers here. I'm not trying.
I am.
I know you are, but I am looking at this objectively with really? As much bias out of it in terms
and,
of.
And something that happened yesterday was their bullpen again.
Yeah,
their bullpen struck once so tiny. You know that those the few. Runs go.
Mm-hmm.
The bullpen came in and struggled.
Yeah,
they added more runs. And they built up that lead, and by the time they came in, when somebody hit got a run in, it was too late. I mean, the lead was too large for them to get close and or get any momentum going. So that's why the bullpen was crucial. The game before, and it just felt like they were not there yesterday.
Dodgers, you got to go to. I think they got to jump on you, Savage, in the first. I think it's the first inning is the key inning in this game tonight. Two runs, jump out to the lead. Maybe have a party in Dodger Stadium. That might be the result of it. And even then, I believe that if the Blue Jays lose tonight, they are not anywhere dead in this series. I think there's still great possibility for these two teams to take it to the distance.
They lose tonight, they still got. Two got home.
They got two at home. Ohtani needs 2 more home runs to tie the postseason record for most home runs in a postseason run. Do you want to guess the one guy who had more, the most home runs in a postseason?
In a postseason, most home runs in a postseason?
Yeah.
Was it Barry Bonds?
No. Barry had the most walks in a postseason, or actually in a World Series. He had the most walks. Bonds had 13 walks in 2002, by the way. Only David Ortiz and Shohei's at 7 walks. Ortiz had 8 in 2013. No, 2020, Randy Rosarena with 10 homers for the Rays in that postseason run.
Look at him.
The eventual loss to the Dodgers in 2020. Score prediction tonight, Jorge. What do you got?
I want to say 3-6 Blue Jays.
Blue Jays win 6-3. I think the Blue Jays will have another one of those innings. I'm not going to say 11 tonight, but I am going to believe that tonight Blue Jays are going to get it done. I think it's a 7-4 victory over the LA Dodgers. Dodgers just got to find their hitter. They need to lay down the hammer offensive day for the Dodgers if I want to change my tune in terms of what this World Series will look like. Big Game 5 coming up. So we'll be back tomorrow, 3 o'clock. We got a great one tomorrow. Student Athlete of the Week. Also, Vance Wahlberg coming on the show live from Fashion Furniture. So we'll have that tomorrow for you, 3 o'clock, 2 hours then. Till then, we'll see you tomorrow. Game 5 World Series coming up next on 1430.